You're listening to Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM. This is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. To be a part of our program, dial toll-free 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Then you can talk to our hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome in to Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. This is Tony Beam, Vice President for Student Life and Christian Worldview at North Greenville University. Christ makes the difference. Flying solo today. Hannah has some sick wee ones again, and that's going to happen when you're a young mother. In fact, I'm surprised that she hasn't been out with morning sickness. She's been here a few times when she wasn't feeling very good, but she's a trooper. Got to stay home with the wee ones when they're not feeling well. So Hannah will be out today. Hopefully she'll be back tomorrow. Well, the influence of Hurricane Florence is still being felt across North Carolina and South Carolina. Not so much here in the upstate. We're very fortunate that we dodged the major effects of the storm. We've had some flooding, some water over the roads in a couple of places, some tree limbs down. But for the most part, it looks like South Carolina has been able to, in the upstate anyway, to avoid the worst of the storm. They said yesterday at Greenville-Spartanburg Airport, by the end of the day, we'd only had like an inch and a half of rain. That's a good thunderstorm. That's not anything to write home about in terms of the amount of rain. Did have some wind about 4:30. I was staying at North Greenville University in one of the guest cabins, and the wind woke me up about 4:30 in the morning. I think that's when it was at its worst, at least up in Tigerville, because I could hear the trees swaying outside, and there was some cracking and popping and creaking, and enough to wake me up and make me a little bit nervous. Nervous enough to go over to the Christian Worldview Center and stretch out on the couch for a while behind steel and brick. So made it to Destiny Church yesterday and preached and had a great service. A lot of folks there, even though the weather was not very good. A lot of churches across the upstate canceled services yesterday, and some of them because they were in areas where there was a lot more rain than what we got here, at least in Spartanburg, Greenville, and in northern Greenville County for the most part. Asheville has seen some significant flooding. Charlotte has seen some problems, but of course the main problems are down along the coast for North Carolina and South Carolina. Wilmington maybe being the worst because it's completely cut off from access from anywhere in the state in North Carolina. They're actually flying in provisions with a helicopter or helicopters, because people can't get out and nobody can get in because the major highways, all of the highways, all the entry points into Wilmington are underwater. And so there are people who are stranded there. We've got about 736,000 people without power in North Carolina, about 170,000 people in South Carolina that were without power. 20,000 people were staying in 150 shelters across North Carolina. And, you know, really, it should have been more than that. I mean, a lot of people did not get out when they should have, and now they're stranded and causing, you know, first responders and rescue workers and a lot of people to marshal resources to get to them and to get supplies to them because of the flooding that's cut them off from any other access. But folks, you know, we've had 17 deaths confirmed that are related to the storm. I think six of those were here in South Carolina, and some of those, you know, are related, but not, in my mind, directly related. For example, there was an, I think it was an 81-year-old man that was packing to evacuate, and he fell, and that fall led to his death. But that's a storm-related death, I guess, because it happened during the storm while he was engaged in some kind of activity that was precipitated by the storm. So anyway, that's the way they count them. And any death is tragic and when we're talking about a storm that comes into the area. And we want to pray for the folks along the coast, the families of people who lost the family members in the storm. And we want to pray now especially for the rescue workers as well and their families as they head into a storm-devastated area, primarily North Carolina. Now, South Carolina did not escape. There's still damage in South Carolina along the coast, and that'll be assessed. I think the main assessment of that will begin today, as things begin to dry out a little bit. Still raining in North Carolina, but for us, the weather forecast today is pretty good. Looks like we're not going to have rain until maybe later in the week. Have a couple of days to dry out. All right. Big news over the weekend, of course. It's not been a good weekend for the Trump administration or for Brett Kavanaugh. It's been a great, and it's not a good weekend really for Paul Manafort, unless you consider getting 10 years in jail for all of his misdeeds as being a good thing. He's made a deal with Mueller. There's not going to be another trial. Looks like the entire sentencing that he's going to get is going to be 10 years on all counts of all the crime. He did plead guilty to bank fraud, which is one of the counts that the jury could not reach a decision on. They were hung over that. And so there's a lot of speculation right now about two things. First of all, and I'll tell you what, we'll take them one at a time. We'll talk about the Mueller investigation and the Manafort deal and the significance of that, or lack of significance for it. And then we'll talk about Brett Kavanaugh now that his accuser has come forward. And the media and the Democrats, of course, this week are going to be having a field day. There are a number of women who have signed a petition saying that Kavanaugh's behavior has been exemplary over the years. The friend, so-called, that was supposed to be present and actually stopped in this assault says the whole account is bogus, that it never happened. It was 35 years ago. There's a lot of things to talk about. We'll get to that in a minute. But let's go to the Mueller Manafort deal here. Yesterday, a couple of prosecutors, lawyer types, and one representative were on the Sunday talk shows talking about the significance here. First, this is Ken Starr on ABC this week talking about Mueller and what Manafort's plea deal means for him. This is cut number four. And then we'll go to Norman Eisen, who is, now get this, listen to this title. He was the special counsel for ethics and government reform in the Obama administration. He should be indicted if he had anything to do with ethics during the Obama administration because of the ethics that were absent. All right, here's Ken Starr first.
The way I think Bob Mueller, and I have worked with Bob Mueller, is looking at it is, I now am moving toward getting to the bottom of the whole originating issue of collusion.
Yeah, Mueller, in fact, Ken Starr says that Mueller is now going to get to the bottom of this collusion. But the problem with that assertion is that Politico has a quote today, and of course, Politico is not exactly a right-wing publication. In fact, it's a very left-wing publication. But the quote from Politico says that there's really the cooperation agreement doesn't involve the Trump campaign. That there was no collusion with Russia, and that the agreement doesn't have anything to do with Trump or anything that happened during the Trump campaign. Now, we don't know this for sure, but that's a source that was close to Manafort that was basically talking to Politico, saying, here's what Manafort is going to talk about, and it doesn't have anything to do with Trump and Russia. It does have to do with Russia. I mean, Manafort was deeply involved with these Russian oligarchs, and Mueller wants to know how much involvement, but it doesn't appear that there's a connection between Manafort's connections to the Russians and the Trump campaign, other than Manafort worked for the Trump campaign for a while. Now, there's a lot of glee about this. I mean, Democrats and the media are just sure that this is it. In fact, Norman Eisen, as we said earlier, also on ABC this week, went out yesterday and said I think he got this backwards. I think he meant to say this is the beginning of the end for Donald Trump, not the end of the beginning. But his prediction is pretty dire about what all this means for Donald Trump, the fact that Manafort has cut a deal. Here's cut number five.
This is not the beginning of the end, but the end of the beginning for Donald Trump. We have seen a new chapter.
That's backwards.
He's not going to survive Manafort's testimony.
Yeah, that's a very dire prediction. He meant to say the beginning of the end, not the end of the beginning. I think he flipped those. But in any event, the point is that this is not going to go well for Trump, that this is Trump won't survive, that once Manafort sings, Trump will be not able to survive in his presidency is what he's talking about. There's still no indication of it, the underlying crime of collusion has been met or that there's any evidence to support that. Manafort, as far as we know, has not given that information to Mueller. There's been no leaks of that information, nothing that would indicate that the president is guilty. But still, the speculation is going to be there because Manafort did cut a deal. And you don't cut a deal without giving something to those who are doing an investigation. He had something that Mueller wanted, but that something may not have anything to do with Donald Trump. It could have to do with the broader investigation, because look at what we've seen. Manafort has been convicted of all these crimes that have nothing to do with the Trump campaign, and most of them, if not all, took place before he ever was associated with the Trump campaign. So it could be that Mueller's looking at something completely different. It could be that Manafort has spilled the beans about a whole bunch of stuff. All right, Adam Schiff, we'll have him in just a minute. We're going to take a break first, and then we'll come back with Adam Schiff and what he had to say yesterday on the Sunday talk shows. Schiff was on Meet the Press, and he thinks that this is a smoking gun as well. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Stay with us.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
By the way, when you're thinking about Manafort and the fact that he cut a deal for 10 years, it kind of overshadows the fact that Papadopoulos got 14 days in jail for lying to the FBI. And that's pretty much all they could get on him. Now, this whole Papadopoulos story started the whole investigation that got the special counsel appointed. And the whole Russian collusion story pretty much revolved around that in the beginning. So the fact that Papadopoulos is going to jail for 14 days and apparently didn't share anything of any significance with Mueller would suggest that, you know, it's unlikely that Manafort has a whole lot of information on the president either. Now, we don't know that for sure yet. I mean, we don't know exactly what Manafort is going to say. But we do know that with Manafort looking down the barrel of 80 years to get 10 years, he must have told Mueller something. But the idea that that something is significant is going to bring down the Trump presidency has certainly not been established yet. All right, this is Adam Schiff. He was on yesterday. Of course, he was crowing about all of this, and he was on Meet the Press yesterday. This is cut number two, talking about what this means for President Trump, and he says it's all bad news.
Manafort is at the confluence of a number of pernicious interests. You've got the president's son trying to get dirt from the Russians in Trump Tower. You've got the president himself asking the Russians for dirt on Hillary Clinton in
statement. Yeah, the president asking for dirt on this was a campaign event. This was Trump trying to be funny. Now we can all, you know, withhold judgment at the moment about whether we think the president was funny or not. But he was talking about, you know, that if the Russians have something, then let's have it. Let's see it. He was joking about the fact that the FBI investigation didn't go anywhere. They didn't come up with anything on Clinton. Her emails have disappeared. And Donald Trump was basically saying, hey, if the Russians have the emails, let's see them. That would be there's no for Adam Schiff to reference that is an indication of how weak his case really is. All right, here we go.
You've got Manafort trying to get money from this Russian oligarch, trying to get made whole.
Yeah, that's Manafort. I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with Donald Trump. It doesn't have anything to do with the Trump presidency. It doesn't have anything to do with the campaign. It has to do with Paul Manafort kind of being a bad guy. I don't think anybody's disputing that. The question is, was Manafort a bad guy at the direction of the president? And was Manafort trying to funnel some type of information that wasn't right into the Trump campaign? And so far, there hasn't been any evidence to back that up. Here we go.
Russians who want to have a relationship with the Trump campaign, they want to help Trump get elected. All those interests converge with Paul Manafort. So basically, we want to know what can Manafort tell us about whether any of that was consummated?
Yeah. Well, so far, there hasn't been. All that is speculation. All that is accusation. It's all bluster on the part of Adam Schiff. And he has shown absolutely little to no interest of some of the real solid evidence that's out there about collusion between the Democrats and the Russians. Open collusion. I mean, you've got John Kerry running around talking to our enemies, telling Iran, advising the Mueller's that all they have to do is just hang on and wait until Trump is out of office and wait until a Democrat gets in office. And he's telling the Iranians this in direct contradiction to U.S. policy when it comes to the Iranian missile deal, which was, and the nuclear deal, which was a joke all along. And so that's going on. You've got Hillary Clinton's server. You've got the emails. You've got, I mean, we could go on and on and on and on in places where Democrats appear to have been more in collusion with a foreign power, particularly a hostile foreign power to the United States, than you have any evidence that Donald Trump ever was. So let's talk to Mike, and then we'll go back to some of the story. Here we go. Mike, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You may not take this question serious, but I definitely got a question here for you.
All right.
Did all the American people who voted for President Donald Trump, did they also conclusion with Russia also?
Collusion?
Because
did they collude?
Because we were accused of being Nazis.
Yeah. Well, no, I understand the point of your question. The mainstream media would say that we were complicit, that we should have known that Donald Trump had to have cheated because Hillary Clinton had to have won the election. And if Hillary Clinton didn't win the election, then there can't be a logical reason, like she wasn't a very good candidate, like she didn't campaign very hard, like she didn't go to Wisconsin and campaign at all. I mean, those reasons won't fly, because then the Democrats would have to admit that their ideas and ideology were rejected by the American people. So they're going to cook all this up, this Russian collusion and the fact that Trump cheated, because that's the, we all know that, at least the left all knows, progressives all know for sure, that's the only way he could have gotten elected president. And so they accuse, they would accuse you and everybody else that voted for President Trump of being in collusion with, not necessarily with the Russians, but with a plan to undermine America by electing somebody like Donald Trump instead of the brilliant Hillary Clinton. That's what they would say.
Right. And also, just quick question about John Kerry.
Yeah.
Did he or did he not commit a crime? Is he not a traitor going over there doing stuff like that?
Well, it's a big debate, Mike. In my mind, I mean, I think he clearly violated the Logan Act, because you cannot, as a private citizen, which is what John Kerry is, after all his bluster about being a former this and a former that, the key word in all of that is former. What he is right now is like you and me and Gary and Hannah and everybody else. He's a private citizen. He's not supposed to be jetting around the world. Yes, former Secretary of States go and they continue to talk to heads of state and have conversations, but they don't go and try to influence policy or suggest contrary policies to the United States while the current government is negotiating in a different direction. That's what John Kerry did. That's unprecedented, and John Kerry should be held accountable. Will he be? Absolutely not. This will go nowhere, believe me. Mike, thanks for the call. We'll take a break. We'll come back. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Stay with us.
Here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hannah's out today, and hopefully be back tomorrow. Chris is on the phone. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Tony. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing fine. I figured some of these stories would get you to surface and begin to spout the progressive line. So please have at it.
Well, I just wanted to ask. I mean, it seems like every time Mueller gets one of these plea deals done, you always downplay it. And he's doing a very good job, a much better job than Trey Gowdy ever did. He never was able to give Clinton a parking ticket or anything. But, you know, Mueller's just, you know,
well,
he's just
for one thing, Trey Gowdy,
right.
For one thing, that's a false accusation right out of the gate, so that people who need to maybe would misunderstand and think that Trey Gowdy and Mueller had the same authority. Mueller is a special counsel. Trey Gowdy was none of this, was not a special counsel looking into Hillary Clinton. I mean, he had the investigative power, and that's one of the things that Trey Gowdy complained about, is that being in his position in the House of Representatives as head of a committee, he did not have the same powers that a special counsel or a special prosecutor would have. And so, no, he didn't come up with the same information. And by the way, so far, just a reminder, so far, nothing that Manafort has been convicted of or sentenced for has anything to do with the Trump campaign or the the Trump administration. Now, the speculation is that, oh, he got a 10-year sentence, so he has sung like a bird, and Mueller's he's going to get all this information. Well, maybe. I mean, what so far we don't know that. There's been no leaks. There's been no suggestion that Mueller's given or that Manafort's given Mueller anything about the Trump administration.
That's another difference right there between Mueller and Gowdy.
Oh, yeah?
No leaks from the Mueller's team.
Chris, there's been a ton of leaks from the Mueller. In fact, the reason that we would that I'm pretty confident that Manafort hasn't told Mueller anything of substance is because nothing has leaked out about what Manafort has said. There's been all kinds of leaks coming out of the Mueller investigation. What are you talking about?
No, not at all.
Chris, that's demonstrably false, and we don't allow demonstrably false statements to be put on this show. If you want to come on and make a case about something, you're welcome to, but the fact that there's been no leaks out of the Mueller investigation, are you kidding me? I mean, there were leaks about the Russians that were indicted. There were leaks that came out about that before they were indicted. I mean, you've got to be kidding me.
My question to you is this. If Manafort sings and he says that, yes, we were looking to get Russian aid in helping Trump win the election, what do you think needs to happen next?
Well, if there is clear and compelling evidence that Donald Trump, as president, as a candidate, worked with a foreign government to take aid from that government to get him elected, then there should be charges brought against him. That's a criminal case.
Okay, then I just want to make sure, because I don't think Republicans will do that. I really don't think they'll do it.
What do you mean they won't do it? They don't have anything to do with it if it's a criminal case. If it's a criminal case, Chris, then it'll go down the line. No. It's got nothing to do. If it's a criminal case, this will go beyond impeachment. Look. President Trump will be impeached and removed from office. Even Republican senators will vote for that if it comes down to the point that there is demonstrable proof that President Trump colluded with the Russians to get himself elected and the Russians were complicit.
You have greater faith in Republicans than I do. I don't think they would do
well, that. You must not have any faith in your Democrat buddies either. I mean, look, Chris, if I like having conversations with you. What frustrates me about it is you come on, you make unsubstantiated claims, you try to box me into a corner with a hypothetical question, and you base that on something that you've said that you just know for sure, which is, listen, Republicans have been first among all people to turn their backs on their own. Republicans eat their young. Democrats are the ones that never, ever do that. They close ranks, they defend, they refuse to admit when they've, when anything is wrong. I mean, I just don't know where you're coming from with any of this. But as always, I appreciate the call because it gives me a great illustration of what I think is a ridiculous premise. All right, did we take a bottom of the hour break or are we way past it? Okay, I get lost in here and wonder what the heck's going on. All right. I wanted to shift gears here just a little bit and talk about Judge Kavanaugh. I mean, Manafort, all that stuff, we'll find out what Manafort knows when the Mueller report's released or somebody from Mueller's team leaks information. And just before I move on to Kavanaugh, let me back up. Any comparison between they hate Trey Gowdy. Progressives hate him. Because Trey Gowdy has been a person who stood and exposed a lot of things that the Democrats have done, that progressives have done, and he's been particularly on these hearings. During the hearings, he's been relentless in his questioning and very pointed in his questioning. He hasn't been a grandstander trying to bring attention to himself. He has been a prosecutor asking poignant, pointed questions to people to get answers for the American people. And the left hates him for it, and that's why Chris would go after him or try to compare him to Mueller. There is no comparison. Trey Gowdy did not have any a fraction of the ability to get information that a special counsel has that's been appointed by the Justice Department. So just keep that in mind. It's a false comparison, and it's a desperate attempt on Chris's part to smear Trey Gowdy. Although, why? I mean, Trey Gowdy's about done. He's going to leave the House of Representatives. He's had enough. And why you would want to come on here, Chris, and smear him when the real point here is, does Manafort have anything to tell Mueller that's going to be significant for President Trump? You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. All right. Let's go back. Let's talk a little bit about Kavanaugh. The question here, now that this woman has come forward, I mean, over the weekend, when this broke, all we had was a faceless woman who was making an accusation in a letter, of a vague letter that was turned over by Dianne Feinstein to the FBI. The FBI, rather than investigating this, has simply put it in the background folder for Kavanaugh, which to me says that it's a 35-year-old case. There's not anything for the FBI to investigate. People, I mean, memories fade. This is based on a woman who never told a soul about this attack until 2012. Now, the woman's name is Christine Blasey Ford. She is a left-wing activist at Palo Alto University, where she teaches. She's been very heavily involved in opposing the president on border security and all this kind of stuff. So she's basically a left-winger. Now, in therapy in 2012, according to the therapist's notes, she said that there were four boys involved in a drunken attack on her. But then later, she changed her story. The therapist's notes are out there. Later, she changed her story that there were two boys and one of them was Kavanaugh. When she talked to her therapist about the four boys, she didn't name Kavanaugh. Although her husband says that, well, yes, she did, but the therapist didn't write the name down. Oh, come on. That's absolutely ridiculous. These notes, the therapist, he's going to write down everything. Why would he not write the name down? Why would he? I mean, Kavanaugh was already a judge. Why was he not going to write his name down in the notes when he wrote down meticulous notes about everything else that she said? You've got the friend they've talked to him, and he said it's absolutely bogus that nothing remotely like this happened. You've got a search for other women, because one of the things that you can pretty much count on is if something like this happened in Kavanaugh's past, it happened more than once. Now, don't be surprised if women start surfacing this week. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, because the progressives are so desperate to keep him off the United States Supreme Court. They would lie. Do I think they would lie about him to achieve that? Absolutely. In a heartbeat. Without taking a breath, they would do it. And I don't believe this story. I don't believe all these women, that there's a bunch of women who actually have come forward and written a document saying that Kavanaugh has been exemplary in his behavior toward women. If you look at the preponderance of evidence on Bill Clinton, if you look at the preponderance of evidence on Roy Moore, I mean, there were multiple women that came forward. There were specific incidents they were talking about. This woman comes forward. She doesn't tell anybody for all these years. Then suddenly in therapy with her husband, she begins to talk about this incident. She doesn't name Kavanaugh. Now all of a sudden she remembers that it was Kavanaugh. And what about this? Dianne Feinstein has this information back in July. She doesn't ask Kavanaugh about it. Let me tell you what they did. They know this is bogus. They know this is a worthless accusation. They put it in their pocket as a Hail Mary desperation ploy. They hope that during these hearings, they would be able to come up with something to sink Kavanaugh's nomination without having to pull this absolutely ridiculous story out of their pocket and try to sell it to the American people. But now, believe me, you're going to see Christine Ford. She's going to be on all these shows. She's going to be talking about how terrible it was, how traumatic it was. You're going to have the media backing her up, and you're going to have Republicans. The vote for Kavanaugh is scheduled for Thursday. We're going to have to see if Republicans have a spine. I mean, this is This is where it comes down to in the sharp elbows world of politics. Is there or is there not going to be a vote? Will the Republicans hold firm, and will they vote to confirm Kavanaugh? He deserves to be on the United States Supreme Court. These are trumped up charges. This is false accusations. This is a Hail Mary pass by progressives. That if you look at any, there's not enough evidence here. You know, calling for an FBI investigation. The reason the FBI passed this on, what are they going to investigate? Are they going to go back 35 years to a high school party and try to find people that were at the party? Are they going to be able to find these other two boys that the woman mentioned in her therapy session in 2012? Are they going to come forward? You know, right now, what the Republicans should do is grow a spine, have the vote, and if Kavanaugh's confirmed, put him on the Supreme Court and move on. That's what they ought to do. Now, my prediction, it's all going to come down again to Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. If they hold firm, if they turn their back on this stuff, then I think McConnell will go ahead with the vote. If they start to waver, they couldn't get Collins to waver when they sent 300 coat hangers to her. So if this begins to raise questions, if they can put enough media pressure, which is what this is all about. This is not, that, believe me, Democrats don't care about this woman. They don't care about what happened. They don't care. And they could care less about any of this. What they care about is, can this be used as a tool to stop Kavanaugh's nomination? That's what's on the table. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Stay with us.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
You know, my question for Chris would be, how many Democrats voted to remove Bill Clinton from office? Bill Clinton lied and lost his law license, his license to practice law. He was disbarred in Arkansas. But yet, Democrats couldn't vote to have him removed from office when he was impeached. I mean, that this idea that Republicans are going to circle the wagons and protect Donald Trump, believe me, there's enough establishment Republicans in Washington that would love to see the end of Donald Trump. I find that unfortunate that they would be gleeful over that, but I know that there are. But Democrats, I mean, when it came to Bill Clinton, he could do no wrong. Didn't matter what he did with Monica Lewinsky. Didn't matter how much evidence there was. It just, all it mattered was, we're not going to allow a sitting Democrat president to be removed from office. We're not going to vote for impeachment. And yet you want to call here and tell me that Republicans won't vote to impeach Donald Trump? I mean, come on. That's ridiculous. All right. Back to Kavanaugh. It's going to come down in the final analysis as to whether or not Mitch McConnell can keep Republicans focused. If there's going to be a full court press today, tomorrow, Wednesday, I mean, Democrats are going to grandstand. They'll threaten to walk out. I mean, everything that you can think of, because this is a desperation nomination. This is a change to the Supreme Court. There's no way that the Democrats are not going to throw everything they've got into this, whether it's got any truth attached to it. They'll use smears, they'll use false statements, whatever it takes to get Kavanaugh derailed. We shouldn't be surprised that something like this popped up as Kavanaugh sailed through the madness of a confirmation hearing. I mean, that confirmation hearing was absolutely an embarrassment to the United States. I mean, you've got people being dragged out of the meetings every day, shouting, screaming, and they were in collusion with Democrat senators that sat there looking sanctimonious while people they invited to come to the hearing did exactly what they wanted them to do to try to help derail Kavanaugh's nomination. It was a circus. It was an embarrassment. The way Democrats behaved. And at the same time, you got President Obama running around saying, we need to return to sanity. So he wants to hand the government back over to people who behave this way and intentionally disrupt a Senate process, a Senate hearing, supposed to be a, you know, the United States Senate is supposed to be a sacrosanct body when you talk to Democrats and how people are supposed to behave there. You know, the left became unhinged when you had, the representative, his name left me, from South Carolina, Wilson, Representative Joe Wilson, when he yelled, "You lie," if you remember, at when President Obama was talking about his health care plan didn't have a provision that would allow abortion. You know, Representative Wilson yelled, "You lie," during a State of the Union address, and the left became unhinged. And yet here you've got a Senate hearing with all these people screaming and hollering and protesting and trying to stop the proceeding and being pulled out of the room. And President Obama says what we need to do is return to that kind of sensical approach to the government. And now you've got this accusation coming forward from 35 years ago, from high school, in a last-ditch attempt to try to convince. And again, in my view, my opinion is that all of this is pointed at Collins and Murkowski. Most other Republicans, I think, are going to look at this and see it for what it is. Collins and Murkowski, because they're liberal Republicans, because they're from liberal states, that are, for the most part, they're going to be influenced. They're hoping, the left is hoping, that they're going to be influenced by this and would agree to put off the hearings. Let's get a full FBI investigation. The only thing that would do is delay. There's nothing to investigate after 35 years and a lot of vague talk. So, you know, will they go ahead with the vote on Thursday? That's what I'm hoping. I mean, I hope that this is not one of those issues where we have an instance where the Republicans decide to go wobbly. They need to go ahead and have this conference. This is, if I thought for a minute that Brett Kavanaugh was guilty, that he actually, in a drunken stupor, held a woman down and tried to rape her, I would say, even if it happened all that long ago, that he doesn't deserve to be on the Supreme Court. But there's the preponderance of evidence in this case points toward his innocence, not toward his guilt. And you don't sink somebody's nomination on a bunch of innuendo and false information and notes coming out from a therapist that actually contradict this woman's story from 35 years ago. All right. We've got another story. Edwella Willis is a young lady who decided to smear a bunch of people, lie about them, say that they made a hate crime or committed a hate crime against her because they put a note on her car telling her to go home, tried to pressure her. Turns out the whole thing was made up by this young lady, and now she's in a lot of hot water. This is cut number three. You're not going to hear this story a lot on a lot of outlets, but I'm going to bring it to you just to demonstrate the lengths that people will go to get in the news and to accuse people and turn themselves into a victim. Here we go.
19-year-old Edwella Lewis of New York's Long Island said a group of teens shouted at her, "Trump 2016," and claimed she didn't belong here. She also said they slashed her tires and left a note on her car reading, "Go home." Police launched an investigation into the possible hate crime, but eventually concluded it never actually happened. Authorities say Lewis has since confessed to writing the note and placing it on her own car. She was arrested last week and has a court appearance set for September 24th. Tom Graham, Fox News.
So it's a made-up story. It was to turn herself into a victim. By the way, what crime is there? There's a hate crime in yelling Trump 2020? I mean, if you say that, if you go up to a person who is Hispanic and you say Trump 2020, then am I going to be able to, will I be accused of a hate crime if I were to say that? I mean, that's ridiculous. But then the whole point, you know, she took it to the point where she talked about they slashed her tires, put the note on her car. She wrote the note herself, put it on her car, and has now finally confessed that after police determined it to be bogus. Now, this is not the first time this has happened. We've seen other progressives, other left-wingers, try to make the same kind of claim that put a story out there that could be negative for the president, that could turn themselves into a victim. Because, look, let's face it, they look at the news media and they see what happens to people who become victims. They become celebrities. They become people go and flock around them. Progressives love these kind of stories. Problem is, a lot of times, more than once, these stories are not true. And I'm telling you, the reason this story is tracking to me is because I believe the same thing is happening with Kavanaugh, that somebody's come forward, made up a story, turned themselves into a victim at a very convenient moment after 35 years of silence, and now this is not just to become a victim, but to derail a nominee to the United States Supreme Court. We've got to get away from this kind of stuff in our culture. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Put that number in your pocket. You might want to use it in the second big hour when we come back after Fox News.